This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. It's utilized in homes, cell phones, airplanes, and more. It's also a prime target for thieves. The versatile and valuable metal, copper. Bill Carter has written a history of copper and is on the money with Chris DeSimeo.
Well, the holiday season now upon us, and one of the finest gifts anyone can ever give is the gift of imagination and learning and knowledge and wisdom, which, of course, means books. Books make great gifts, and it's a pleasure to welcome to the show an author of a very new book, Bill Carter, whose earlier works include Red Summer, The Danger, Madness, and Exaltation of Salmon Fishing in a Remote Alaskan Village, and also Fools Rush In, A True Story of Love, War, and Redemption. Bill's latest book is called Boom, Bust, Boom. It's a story about copper, the metal that runs the world. And if you are in the least bit interested about how the global economy runs on certain things that might not be apparent, it makes fine reading. And Bill joins us all the way from his home in Flagstaff, Arizona. Bill, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Bill, you start your book, Boom, Bust, Boom, by telling a story, innocent sounding enough at the beginning, of how you just wanted to kind of do the Martha Stewart thing and grow a little garden in your backyard in Bisbee, Arizona. What happened next?
Yeah, you know, my wife and I lived there for many years, and I loved to garden, and so I have a 2-year-old daughter at the time, and my wife was pregnant with our second daughter, and I really wanted to, you know, share the love of growing food with my daughter. So we went through the hard labor of putting in whole drip systems and all that, and getting the soil ready, and it was going great. And then what happened is that over the months of getting everything ready and then eventually eating the food, my wife, wisely enough, didn't eat the food or participate in the garden because of being pregnant, and my daughter didn't eat the food either because she's 2. And she doesn't like things that are healthy.
Right.
I got sick, and it turns out that my yard had a very high level of arsenic and lead, which is one of the things that led me to write this book. I knew I lived in an old copper town, but I didn't know quite what that meant. So that was one of the things that led me to write the book.
And where did the arsenic and lead come from? These were the byproducts of the smelting process, or they were leached into the soil? Where did all those contaminants originate?
A little bit of both. When you have, in the old days, Bisbee was a very large mine, and it had smelters. And the way smelters operate is they basically take the copper from the ore, from the rock, and they belch out the rest of it, which in this case, most the time, copper is attached to very heavy metals such as arsenic, lead, and other things. So those just kind of drifted in the air and landed on people's soil.
Very nice.
The second way it came into our soil was that Bisbee is a very hilly, it's in the mountains. So they wanted to level the foundations of homes. And at the time, they didn't realize that if you take the tailings piles, which is really today what they mine for more copper, if you take that and put it in people's yards, you're really just piling on a bunch of heavy metal in people's yards.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in your book, Boom, Bust, Boom, you talk about how, as you investigated the deed to your house, and it had an interesting name on it, but it also had an interesting condition, namely something about if you the homeowner, own the ground 40, you know, the ground and down to 40 feet, but beyond that, it's anyone's guess. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, most people don't realize that is actually on a lot of people's titles, especially in anywhere in the West. You probably don't own, you own your home, but you don't own what's 40 feet beneath it. And that's a common language from old mining claims. A lot of those claims are still active. And it just means that they can, under your house, they can go and get whatever's down there, gold, copper, nickel. And that kind of freaked me out.
Sure.
That, you know, that with the garden, I started to realize I need to understand, one, as a parent, do I want to live here? Do I want to raise my children in a place where, you know, the schoolyards have this in their yards? And do I want to live in a place that also, at the same time, there was a lot of talk about they're going to reopen the mine? So
sure.
It became a real threat.
Sure. And in your book, Boom, Bust, Boom, you then go into the history of copper. It's a metal that's been used by bipeds for thousands of years, going back into the pre-Roman days. Tell us about the history of copper and how much of it's around and how much of it is still being used that's been yanked out of the ground.
About 80% of all copper that's been yanked out of the ground over a 10,000-year period is still in use. And the reason is that one of the reasons that copper is this amazing metal is it doesn't decay, ever. So if you have an old Egyptian plumbing apparatus, which is 4,000 years old, you can go there today and they still can use it. It's just an incredible metal in that sense. That's why copper is a very valued scrap metal, because it's always good. All you have to do is melt out some impurities, put it back in a smelter, and you have 100% copper again.
Yeah, and you mentioned they used to just pound it out of the rock then, that one of the reasons, one of the impetus for countries to invade others and enslave the people they defeated was to bring them back to do this horrible, hard work.
Let's go into some history. If you go into, like, the Bible, or if you go into really old historical accounts, and some of them have been, you know, Hollywoodized, most of them are around mining. We just don't, it's not the thing you read about in those accounts, but it is what is driving the army, the nation state to take over other nations. You know, Rome invaded England specifically to get their copper and tin. Rome invaded Carthage to get their copper. It was a copper mine. Egyptians invaded Mesopotamia for the same reason, and they ran a huge operation out of Cyprus and the Sinai. You know, the Euphrates River, which is basically, all historians will tell you, is the cradle of life. It's kind of where things began. Euphrates means copper river in Sumerian.
Really? And I didn't realize that. And, of course, a company whose least name is still around, a very large mining company, was named after a river in Spain, you point out in your book, that has been producing copper for 4,000 years. What's the name of that mine again?
It's called the Rio Tinto, and Spain sold it to Rio Tinto, the company, in the 1800s. And it's been running for 4,000 years. The reason it's called Rio Tinto is the river that runs below the mine is always it's red.
Tinted red.
Tinted red, yeah. And there's a mine in Cyprus, one of the oldest and most important places in the old world was Cyprus. And it has also been running for about 4,000 years, with stoppages for wars and, you know, things like that.
Sure. So, of course, copper has so many uses. You mentioned that there are millions of miles of copper in homes, and it's being used for so many commercial building. It's used in all kinds of, it has medicinal uses, it has agricultural uses, as you point out in your book. And yet, getting it out of the ground, despite the fact that it can produce jobs, doesn't come without some kind of side effect, so to speak, economic side effect. You spent a good deal of your book talking about two places, Alaska and also Superior, Arizona. Tell us what's going on. What are the discussions or arguments, on either side of the copper mining table?
Well, on the mining side of the table, the argument is that we need copper. It's very simple. And especially as we move further and further into green technology, renewable technology, wind, solar, biofuels, wind and solar use an enormous amount of copper, much more than anything we ever dream of in terms of carbon-based fuel. So as we move into a green technology, which I think is a very good idea, we have to remind ourselves that is going to necessitate more open-pit copper mines. The other side is open-pit copper mines, which are enormous in size, 1 mile long, usually 1 mile wide, 2,000 feet deep. These are that go on for 50 to 75 years. This is just an extraordinary undertaking that has huge environmental impacts for anywhere around that mine. Anywhere around that mine is going to now be utterly altered, the watershed, the aquifers, the people, the air. It's all going to essentially be contaminated. And this is not me telling you this because the mining companies they want to contain it. This is something that nobody knows how to contain. It's too large. And when you expose the earth at that level to air and water, what happens is that you have a breakdown, and you have sulfuric acid runoff, and there's no way that people know how to stop that. And that sulfuric acid runoff, which comes from being exposed to rain and water, creates rivers of pollution, and usually that goes into your aquifer.
Wow, and this is all laid out, of course, in your book, Boom, Bust, Boom, the story about copper, the metal that runs the world. And Bill Carter, I want to thank you so much for taking part of your Saturday morning to be with us.
You bet. Thank you very much for having me.
For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.